As an industry, the state of checkout is embarrassing.
I don't have to buy into a monolith that's built by one company with one ethos and one approach.
Entrepreneurship is the greatest vehicle for equality and independence and whatever your unique definition of success might be.
I think you win in e-commerce with people.
You can actually have a different checkout experience for different customer groups.
Welcome to Own Your Commerce. This is a show focused on what it takes to scale the best e-commerce brands in the world. I'm your host, Jay Myers, and the show is brought to you by Bold Commerce.
Okay, I have with me today Ellie Finkelstein, who is the co-founder and CEO of Constructor.io. I say Constructor.io, and I don't know if he says it, but I say it. I love names with .io in it, which is the only product and search platform built on the foundation of AI, which I'm excited to get into that a little bit. And also, it's the only one made specifically for e-commerce. There's a lot of search tools out there. Constructor is very focused on e-commerce, which is, of course, the main focus of the show. So this is, I think we're going to get a lot of interesting things out of that. And it's used by some of the largest companies in the world. So Sephora, American Eagle, Under Armour, Petco, Birkenstock, Target, many more. These are household names that you trust and know. And if you want to see it in action, you can go to a lot of these. Ellie graduated with a master's degree from computational linguistics. He has worked as a data scientist and an engineer. He spent over 15 years working in various areas of machine learning and natural language processing. Ellie, first of all, I don't feel qualified to
I'm honored to be here.
No, I'm honored to have you on. Thank you so much for coming on. And I was actually thinking before this, we're slowly checking off the bingo board of talks. We were on a panel together in New York at NRF in 23. I hosted a panel with you on it in New York at NRF 24. Now you're on my podcast. So we got to, what's next? You have to host a panel with me on it.
And then we start a podcast, I guess.
You got to start a podcast. Yeah, we'll get the bingo board.
But if I do start one, you'll be the first guest.
Okay, there we go. Let's dive right into it. So I know our listeners are going to get a ton from this show. But first, can you give us some background on Constructor? What is it? You're not just the CEO, you're also the founder. So I know you've got a story about how it started, but what is Constructor?
Yes. So Constructor is a product discovery platform that's built for large e-commerce companies. I say product discovery instead of search because I think that the problem that we're trying to solve is wider than just search. So what we try to do is when somebody goes onto one of the large e-commerce companies that we power, like some of the ones that you mentioned, like Sephora, for example, whether they're searching for something or they're browsing maybe a category page or they're seeing recommendations or they're interacting with like an AI shopping assistant or something like that, basically anywhere that that company could be showing them products, our job is to make sure the products that are returned to the user are going to be attractive to them, they're going to be personalized to them, and they're going to be optimizing for the business metric the retailer most cares about.
I love that. It's not search, it's product discovery. So I think when you search on Amazon, this is something that most people probably can relate to. You search for a product, you see a couple products, but then you see some other products that are related. Like I might search for a SIM card or something, but then I see SIM card cases or batteries for a camera or something. Like it's related. So it's evolved a lot. Like it's not just search, like we think of search. So you classify Constructor as product discovery.
That's how we like to think about it because the journey to buying something, it's not always just via search. Like one of the most interesting things to me is when you look at the percentage of people that search on different types of websites, there is a pretty big difference between verticals. So like you take grocery, for example, it'll be like 50% plus of people that'll search. And the conversion rates on the search will be very, very high. Like you search for Coke, like you're probably going to buy Coke. On the flip side, if you're looking at something like apparel, apparel actually tends to have very low search rates. Like something like 5 to 15% is very typical. And when you think about it, it kind of makes sense too. Like you could search for a pair of pants or you could just like click the pants category and then just like start browsing through it. Or you see something on, like you don't usually know when you're going there, like exactly the type of pants that you're going to buy or something like that. But regardless of whether you search for it or you go to the category or you see these like different kinds of pants or whatever via recommendations, the problem is still really similar. It's trying to learn about your intent as a user. It's trying to learn about what sorts of things you like as a user, you know, what your size is, like what kind of colors you like, et cetera. And then it's trying to put attractive products in front of you that ideally, if it's something that you like, that you'll buy. And that's a very, very similar problem, whether it's search, whether it's browse, whether it's recommendations, whether it's like a product finder, a quiz, whether it's one of these like new AI shopping assistants, like any which way, fundamentally, it's you're trying to put things in front of the user that are attractive to them. And then when you're going even a little bit outside of it, which I think is interesting to think about as well, and you're touching upon it a little bit too, like it's not only about the products that you show at this point also. So, you know, can you show somebody, let's say you're somebody searching for like a laptop, can you show them maybe some like expert reviews of laptops or something like that? You know, maybe you show them like a, I don't know, like a article about like the top 10 best laptops for somebody living in like somebody working or something like that.
Yeah.
Like it's an article. It's not necessarily a product, but it's still part of product discovery. It's a step along the way. Like the goal of the e-commerce company is still the same. It's not just that you read the article. It's that you read the article and then right now or eventually you buy something. And regardless of which of those pieces we're talking about, like somebody going directly for a product or them going to an article, whether somebody searches or they browse or they get recommendations, whatever, any which way it's product discovery and any which way we'd love to help make sure that what the user sees is attractive to them, it's personalized to them, it's optimizing for the business metric the retailer most cares about. Because that's, at the end of the day, I think what makes the user, the shopper happiest, and what's what keeps the retailer in business.
I have so many questions here. I mean, I have some questions about why you started Constructor and that, but while we're on this topic here, I'm super interested in, you know, you mentioned that when someone's looking for a Coke or a bottle of, or Pepsi or something, that's like very high use case for when they use search versus when they're shopping for apparel. So right away, my mind goes to why is that? My assumption is that with clothing, people want to be inspired. They don't necessarily know what they're looking for. Like I go to, like I just went on Birkenstock, which is one of your brands. They're using, is it Birkenstock.com? Like the main one is using it?
They use us in most countries.
Most countries. Okay.
Not every country, but most countries.
So I'll just use shoes as an example. I might not have a specific shoe I'm looking for, but one of the things I went in the search and I typed in red. I didn't type in a shoe. And then it showed me a whole bunch of red shoes. And instead of going to, I don't even actually know how I would find that in the menu item. I guess I could go to, I could filter. Filters, I could go to men's and then filter by red. Or do you think there's a, or maybe it's like this already, I don't know, but a better experience as a browser using search, like not someone spear phishing for a specific product. Like we traditionally think search is when you're looking for a product. We don't think search is to get inspired, but I think it can be. Like when I was looking at those Birkenstocks and I saw all the red and I saw all the different red ones, it almost created a more tailored lookbook based off of what I was searching for.
Yeah.
Do you think we're kind of there and brands maybe aren't, or like customers haven't adopted it that way? Is there still a ways to go in technology, or what are your thoughts on that?
So I think that the future of product discovery is very multimodal. And I think that most companies aren't quite there yet, and because it requires work, but it's one product discovery journey that's connected across all facets of product discovery, but that's learning more about the user's intent through every facet. So I'll give you an example. Like, let's say that the search on our apparel company, we'll typically see when we go in is that search percentage will be low. Like, again, it'll be something like 5-15%. And some of that will just be natural, like it's apparel, and depending on the type of apparel, depending on the users, like there'll be different affinities to whether they search or not. One thing that we'll see is that people are convinced that search isn't super important because the percentage of the users that are searching is pretty low.
Mm.
What we'll also see if you dig in is that not every person that comes to the website is equal. So this is true even without Constructor. This is true on just about any website that you look at. You'll see that the conversion rate for a searching user is always higher. I'm not saying almost always. I'm saying always. Literally, I've never seen a situation where it wasn't higher than a non-searching user. And it's not by like a little bit. It's usually like a 2 or 3x. So those users, first of all, they've just got higher intent. The second thing is that because those searches, when we're getting in there, they tend to not be very good. So like, you know, you'll be using something out of the box that's built into maybe your e-commerce platform or whatever. When you install something like Constructor, you wind up seeing the search percentage increase. It takes time because people are trained a certain way. right? Like if they're used to your search just not being very good and they're a loyal customer, they get the idea that probably you don't search very much. You maybe go to the browser or something like that. But once you install something like Constructor, you see the search percentage go up. You also see the conversion rate go up, which is a nice side benefit. Then the last thing, and I think this touches upon the point that you were making before, is because I think that it should be multimodal, you've got these different parts of the product discovery experience where each one of them solves for a different use case. So like within search, you have at least what I consider to be a subdomain of auto-suggest or autocomplete. It's like the type ahead when you first start typing in, like what sorts of things does it recommend to you? I remember I was working a really long time ago. My background is as a search engineer from like a long, long time ago. I was working at a company called Shutterstock, who they sell stock photography.
Yeah, I've used them.
Perfect. They're a good company. But I remember at least at the time, one of our most common search terms there was just the term business. And you can probably imagine the conversion rate on that was not very high. And at least the hypothesis that we had was it was not very high because what the heck does someone mean when they search for business? Like, yeah. Is that some people doing business? Like, is it a sign that says business? Is it like the abstract concept of business made in the, who knows, right? So on the one hand, it's interesting because I think that people would use it as sort of like the way to start discovering, like what are the different options? But the other thing is if within the auto suggest, you start giving people ideas of different ways of phrasing what they're actually looking for. So if somebody starts typing in business, you give them like two people doing business. You give them like a sign that says business. You give them like people in a business meeting, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Like things that people might mean when they search for that word. That helps them both tailor down what they actually mean, and it helps them do discovery via the search. And if you can start to get good at that, then you start to train the people, especially like their most loyal users, the ones where most of your, or a good chunk of your revenue is coming from. Like now they're using the search more because they're using it also as discovery and because they're gaining more trust within it. On a similar note, like I think that a cool thing that's possible now that wasn't possible before is you can start to produce product finders or quizzes at scale. I think that's something interesting that generative AI made possible. So if you look at like a typical website, most of them, when you look at the very, very common searches, they do tend to be these like very opaque things like the word business. And they do tend to have lower conversion rates than the spearfishers that you were talking about before. But if you give people the option when they do that search of maybe there's like a banner, you know, halfway down the page or something like that, that's like, oh, you're looking for pants? Like, take our quiz. Like, tell us a little bit more about yourself. That can be a way to turn that like very broad intent that tends to have lower conversion into something that's a little bit more tailored and somebody can buy with confidence because they've gone through this quiz. So I know I'm rambling a little bit, but...
No, this is good. Something that struck me was you said like people are inherently bad at searching. Like I've probably searched business like looking for certain photos, but you're looking for some shot for like a deck or something and you want a scene of at a board table or something. I don't know what, you know, but we are bad at searching. And so to build in that recommendations of what to search, not just recommended products, but actually improving the search. That's fascinating. Do you think, is it causation or, well, I forgot, I'm sorry, I always get the...
Correlation or causation.
Sorry, that's what it's... Yes. When conversion is higher with a search, is it because that customer has higher intent to purchase coming to the site and they are looking for a specific product, or is it causation where that customer finds the product faster? Time matters. Every second you're on a site, there's a chance for a distraction, your kid to call you, your phone to ring, or 100 other things to happen. And if you're sifting through category pages trying to find a product versus searching, it's probably speeds up. I'd be super curious. I don't know if you have this data or not, but like the time to purchase for a journey that initiates with a search versus not a search. Like maybe there is a bit of causation or maybe both. I don't know. What do you see there?
I think it's a mix. And I think there's a decent amount of data to back this up. Like it's not something that we've done like a deep study on or something like that. But I would say that it's a mix and probably more on the correlation part. So the reason that I say that is that increased conversion rate for search is true across every single search engine that I've ever seen. So like we could come into a company and they could have the worst search. Like they haven't replaced it in 20 years or something like that. And the conversion rate for searching users is still going to be higher than non-searching. It's slow, it's terrible, it messes all sorts of things up, it doesn't even have basic typo tolerance. Still, the search engine user is going to have higher conversion. The causation part is once you fix that, like you install a better search engine, the conversion rate on the search versus non-search typically gets even higher. So long story short, it's a mix, but like I think that it's probably more on the correlation side just because we come in and like the conversion rate on those searching users is already, call it like 2x, 3x higher.
Yeah. Well, you're capitalizing on those customers with high intent, because the opposite scenario is they come to the store with high intent, they sift through categories and filters and they can't find the product and then they abandon their shopping journey. So they did come there with high intent, but a good search capitalizes quickly on that high intent. So it's both.
Yeah. So this is like, you know, you take that apparel example again, and like, you know, somebody's looking at it and let's say they've only got 15% of their users that are searching and they say like, oh, you know, maybe this is not really worth this and the place to invest. Like it's such a small number. If you actually do the math on it, like there's a good chance that their searching users are like 2x, 3x more likely to convert than the non-searching users. So you get from like 15% of users to let's say like 40, 45% of revenue. And then you're talking about how you can make it better with a better search engine. Like that's already affecting like close to half of your revenue. Like it's not a small thing. And these are your most high intent users. Like if you're looking for immediate revenue increases, like this is one of the best places to look for it. The browsing folks, like you'll be able to get to them eventually, but they're much more likely to not buy something right now to buy something later because they're still in browse mode. They don't know exactly what they want.
I guarantee there's someone listening right now that's thinking like, isn't search a search? Like what is so, like what do you say to someone that like every platform has a search function built in? I think. And there's a lot out there. There is like traditional search. There's Elasticsearch. There's AI. Your search built on top of AI. There's natural language conversational search, which is starting to emerge. Like, I'm not looking for red shoes. I'm looking for good shoes to go to dinner with. So yeah. Like that type of a concept. What do you say when you're trying to explain like search isn't just search? Actually, sorry, maybe can you actually, for the listeners, what are all those different types? That would be a good, yeah, like what basic search, Elasticsearch, AI, conversational, can you quickly kind of explain that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that there's like an agreement on like, these are the different kinds. I can give you my opinion. It's nothing more than my opinion. At least mentally, I divide it into, call it three categories. So one of them is discovery. Like you don't know exactly what you want yet. You're looking for very broad terms. Like this is the person searching for business on the stock photography website, or they're searching for pants on an apparel website. Like they're not giving you a whole lot more information because they don't know. Like they're just looking to, if you analogize them to somebody walking into a physical store, like they want to get to an aisle and they want to see what's available in the aisle. They're not coming in with an exact idea of which thing they're going to buy. Like they just want to see like all the different pants that you sell. The second kind is the spearfisher. So this is a person that's much closer to knowing exactly what they want. Like the extreme example of this is they'll put in like MacBook Pro, like with the model number and, you know, everything. Like, you know exactly what you want. Maybe you don't spell it in the exact right way that the retailer has it. Like maybe you add some spaces or whatever, but like as long as there's good typo tolerance, like you'll be able to find it that way. And then the last one that I think is emerging now is, I don't really know if even search is the right term for it, but it's somebody with like a, maybe call it like a more human language intent, like one that you weren't able to express before. And so like as an example, it's like, I'm looking for like a shirt that goes well with blue pants. Right? There's not really, in the past, there was not really a great way to search for that. Like you would have a search engine where it would either match in the keywords and like skip a bunch of those and get you a bunch of crap. Maybe we'll try to match on vectors or something like that, but like you're still like, okay, you know, what's close to blue? Like you don't really understand the intent. And so you got like stuff that's sort of kind of relevant. Like I joke around that I've seen vector search engines where like you search for like a bag of chips and like it gives you back potatoes. And it's like, those are kind of related, I guess, like chips made out of potatoes. Like I see where you made the connection, but like this isn't helpful for me as a shopper. Like this is completely useless. But now, with the advent of transformers, which is a T in ChatGPT, what that stands for, you actually can get a good understanding of these longer form, more specific, more human intents. And I think that that's an incredibly exciting place to be within product discovery as a whole, because beforehand, when you had one of those intents, like you kind of needed to go off the e-commerce website, you needed to go to Google or somewhere like that, and you would try to like find different ways of phrasing it and maybe get to like an article or a listicle or something like that. And e-commerce websites just like sitting there the whole time hoping that you'll come back and probably paying for ad dollars trying to get you back. I think in the new world, it'll give people the opportunity to do that sort of research on site because we can finally understand that kind of more human-based query. And it makes me pretty excited to be working in this space. Like, I think that this has been a long time coming. And it's not a matter of like if it'll be built at this point. It's a matter of when.
When do you think we'll get rid of the menus and just have a search bar?
I don't think we will get rid of the menus. I think that each thing has its own place. Like, I think that that menu is very good for the sort of person that's doing just broad discovery. Like, I don't think that just because we have amazing AI, people don't want to go to an aisle and just see what's available anymore.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's still an enjoyable and human experience.
I talked to someone maybe 7 years ago, and you know, you often ask, like, what do you think will be different about e-commerce in 5 years? Actually, I think that's one of our lightning round questions at the end of, with you. But I remember this person saying that e-commerce stores will look very much like a search engine. Like, you'll land on a site and it'll be, what can I help you find today? And it's just a journey starting with a search, and it learns more about you, and it like it can send you down personalized shopping experience based off of, because right away it knows I'm looking for men's shoes. Okay, so I'm a man looking for shoes or black and I business or whatever. And each time it gets smarter and smarter and my shopping experience completely different. But it's like the website is really like a homepage, but with just search. And it hasn't really come to fruition. Do you see benefit of a brand maybe testing that?
I mean, I think that reasonable people can disagree on this stuff, but at least my opinion is I don't think that that's the right thing to do at all. Like, I think that there's a lot of value in letting people decide whether they want to do the buying or whether they want to be sold to and see what sorts of things you have available. Like,
good point.
I'll give you a silly example. This happens almost every night and it drives me crazy. I have a 7-year-old son and he'll come home from school. And at this point, nobody else is home. It's just the two of us. And I'll ask him, like, he'll say, you know, I'm hungry. I'll say, okay, what do you want to eat? And he'll say, well, what do we have? And like, I can be like, it's annoying. Like, now I'm like going through like the whole refrigerator and all the cabinets. Yeah. And I'm trying to like give him ideas. But like, that's a very human thing for him to say. Like, I don't know, like, what do we have available? Like, maybe there's something that I'm not thinking about, but like, if you show me, I'll be excited about it. And I don't think that that's limited to 7-year-olds. Like, I think that's very, very human when we're shopping too. Like, we go to a mall, we see like what stores are around. Like, we walk into the store, we want to see like, what are the different aisles that are available? What do you have? If you change to only having a search bar, like, you take away this experience of being able to be delighted and surprised by something that you weren't planning on looking for, but turns out you're actually pretty excited about.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. I have a 7-year-old son too, and he said that exact same thing to me when I and then once I start cooking, I come over, well, what are you making? Just go relax while I cook.
So we'll get them together on the next podcast. They can decide.
Yeah. They can sit there and question our every cooking move.
Exactly.
I just want to say thank you to all the support everyone has given this show. The feedback and reviews have been amazing. I'm truly humbled and honored that we have a perfect 5.0 five-star rating in iTunes. If you're one of the people that have left a review, sincerely thank you. We read every single one. If you haven't left one yet and you're enjoying the show, would you consider leaving one right now? If you do, thank you so much. Okay, on with the show.
So what about some other benefits of search? Like, you mentioned when you at Shutterstock, you knew that business was the number one search. I imagine Constructor gives some...
It wasn't the number one. Just for it was.
Oh, it was a popular one. Yeah.
If I remember, the number one search was the word vector, if I remember right at the time.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah. Or like transparent, because people always want something with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I imagine Constructor has some good analytics on what's being searched the most and maybe what converts the most or even by different region. And so is there some benefits other than just search that brands can start tailoring their website? For example, if, you know, I searched red shoes on Birkenstock, if red shoes is the most popular search, what do brands do with some of the data that they get from Constructor?
Yeah, I think that there's another part to the problem of product discovery that, at least in my opinion, it should be implied and should be part of it, which is personalization. Like, people talk about having like a separate personalization vendor, and I'm like, that's probably not what you want. Like you want it to be woven within all of the different parts of product discovery. Like at least our vision on this is the search should be learning from your activity when you browse. The browse should be learning from your activity when you get recommendations. The recommendations are learning from the first two. All of those are learning from what you tell the AI shopping assistant. Like for you as a user, it's one holistic connected experience. And you don't really care whether you're discovering products via search or via browse or via recommendations. Like you just care that things that are attractive to you in that moment are getting shown to you or not. And so when we get to the data part of this, like if you're doing the personalization correctly, then you're able to make all sorts of interesting connections. So like, for example, you know, I'm searching for, let's say, like a sweater. And if I'm doing that search in February in Winnipeg versus if I'm doing that search in February in Florida, like, do you show the same things? The data kind of says no. Like what somebody probably means when they want a sweater in Winnipeg in February is going to be way too hot to wear in Florida in February and vice versa. The thing in Florida is going to be way too warm or way too cold for Winnipeg.
And then we have provinces up here that call them bunny hugs and all kinds of other weird things. So you got, just to make it even more confusing, but
there you go.
Sorry.
There you go. Yeah. But yeah, like I think that first of all, having a platform that they can learn from that data itself is important. Like at least that's our opinion on it. It's what we've built the business on. But then being able to show you some of that data, being able to like help you get value out of it and figure out those interesting correlations, I think is equally important.
Do you see brands like optimizing their homepage based off of the data? So like if I'm seeing that red shoes are the most popular search term or men, I don't know, just like, and then putting that on the homepage or changing the menu layout, like the navigation and optimizing for if a certain category is the most commonly hit through searches. Like, do you see a lot of brands using that and making strategy decisions around the UX of their site?
I don't see a ton of that. And I'm not sure how I feel about it. Like, I think that one of the things that's missed in this new world that we're living in, where everybody's second word, third word out of their mouth is AI something. Like I studied this stuff in university, so obviously I like it. But I think that folks like me also tend to have this tendency of thinking that it can solve all problems. And I don't think that it can. Like I think that a big part of shopping is having this experience of essentially being merchandised to. Like, a brand's value, like a lot of their equity is merchandising. It's figuring out like, how do you want to portray yourself to the world? And that's how you create what that brand is. And I think that if everybody just goes off and says like, I should put the thing that's converting the most today on the homepage and like, you know, just change it every day, it would make shopping a much more boring experience. And I think that you'd probably be trading a lot of long-term value in exchange for short-term value. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that a lot of what's made the best brands in the world special is that they listen to the data for, let's say, like the long tail. Like they say, like, that's not worth me, you know, spending time on. But for the fat head of queries, like especially for people coming to the website, like seeing that homepage for the first time, like for them, I'm going to have a strong opinion about what they see. So like if you're a luxury retailer, like even if your items that are on sale sell the best, there's a good chance that you don't want those to be shown on the homepage first. Like you won't get as many sales right now, but you'll get to maintain your brand, which is luxury and not sale.
Fair enough. Yes. Yeah. The most popular item might be that accessory add-on, but that's not what you want to inspire them with on the homepage.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, what do you want to be defined by? And that's like more art than science, I think. I think the best brands that did this stuff, like they weren't for the most part, like checking the data every 5 seconds. Like they had a vision. They were like, this is, you know, how I want to be defined. And then you're using something like a product discovery platform to basically give yourself time to do that sort of strategic work, that art part. Saying like, you know, you're not going to go and merchandise like every single one of your like 100,000 bottom lower queries. Not going to merchandise every single one of your like landing pages or something like that. You basically want to have strategy, and that's what you want to be able to define to that product discovery platform of like, my brand is luxury, so don't show items that are on sale. But as long as you're not showing items that are on sale, like use the data to figure out what items you should show people. So basically you're defining the strategy and then you're using the product discovery platform and the AI there for execution. I don't think you should use the AI for strategy. I don't think that's a good idea.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, it is very important to remember that it is also art. It is your brand. And you emphasize something that I really appreciated, is that people are shopping. They're not just buying, they're shopping. And shopping is a lot different than just entering a SKU and ordering it, right? Like that's a very different process. And so good to remember. So if someone's listening and they want to make sure that they like get things right in search, like what should brands be thinking about when they build their strategy around search? Like what do you recommend they do? Like you've mentioned a lot around like product discovery and implementing ways to get to categories, get to aisles. And like someone listening right now, they don't know if they have good search or bad search. What do you have some like core things that a brand should think about or build into their strategy?
Yeah. So the very first thing that we'll ask people when we start working with them, or even when they start first evaluating us, is what does success look like? I think that that's a question that not nearly enough people within that are working on product discovery think about. Like this was true in the olden days, but I still think it's true today for the vast majority of search engines. Like they view success as at least what I would call like a vanity metric. Like they'll be like, oh, success is how fast you bring back the results. And I'm like, sure, that's important. But if you bring back like bad results faster than everybody else, like that's not a win. Like maybe they'll say like, okay, well, success is relevant results. Like I want the results to look relevant. And it's like, okay, well, let's do a thought experiment. Like let's say we run an A/B test and we've got this great search engine where like all of the results look more relevant to you specifically. And that thing drops your revenue 5%. Are you celebrating the relevance or are you saying, no, this is a terrible idea and we need to stop using it? I would bet that it's probably the latter. Like it's a means to an end, maybe. But it's not typically what success is itself. Like success, if you're an e-commerce company, it's probably going to be defined by like, are you increasing conversions or are you increasing revenue or are you increasing profit? And then within these things, I think you get into some really interesting conversations of the trade-offs. And they're uncomfortable conversations. I think that a lot of the time people don't really want to be thinking about trade-offs. But that doesn't mean that they don't exist. So like, for example, you know, if you optimize for revenue, then maybe that means that you sell fewer products overall, maybe to fewer people, but the products that you sell are more expensive. And like, is that part of your long-term strategy? Like, would that make you happy? Maybe for some companies it would. Maybe for some companies, like they are in growth mode and they don't care quite as much about getting as much revenue right now. They want as many people to buy from them as possible because the best indicator of somebody coming back and buying something is that they bought something right now. Maybe you're in a profit crunch or something like that. Like some retailers that recently went out of business. Like if you were asking them before they went out of business, like what do you do to save the business? It's not like sell more loss leaders. It's increased profit. And so at that point, like that's what your search engine should solve for. And so at least to me, like that's the very first question that people should be asking them when they're asking themselves when they're considering product discovery. It's what does success actually look like and what am I willing to trade off for it? And I think that like for 99% of companies, they don't ask themselves that question. What they do instead is they're like, I want a search that gives me back more relevant results faster.
So are these things you can tweak with Constructor based off of these different goals? I want to optimize for relevancy. I want to optimize for highest AOV. I want to optimize for profitability, conversion. Yeah, exactly. Like these are all, there's dials in the back that they can tweak.
So essentially what we're doing at the very beginning of an implementation is we're having a conversation about this stuff and we want to do this stuff via conversation. We only work with larger e-commerce companies, so it lets us have these relationships with each one of our customers that like a developer tool can't. But it's having this conversation of making sure that you understand the trade-offs, making sure that you understand like what it means to optimize for one thing versus another. But Constructor underneath the hood, it's a machine learning problem. So you're basically taking in a bunch of data to optimize for some variable. And what that variable is that you optimize for, it can be anything as long as it's a mathematical function. Like you want to do revenue, great. You want to do like the harmonic mean of like revenue and profit, great. Like if it can be defined as a mathematical function, we can do it. But what that function should be is like a very interesting strategic discussion that we recommend to having before just like clicking a button.
What are some brands that you think are doing an amazing job with search? And it can be fine if it's some brands of yours or any, but like just for listeners, if someone wants to go see and experience a great, what you think is a benchmark of great search, who are some companies that come to mind?
Yeah. So in terms of companies that we power, there's a bunch of them, but one that we've worked with for a long time that I think is constantly trying to out-innovate like what they had is Sephora. They continue to win like personalization competitions and stuff like that. And they keep innovating on top of what they have. And I think that they've pushed us in very healthy ways to help them with that innovation. And then when you're talking about companies that we don't power, my answer is probably is actually, I think, surprising to most people when I say it, but I think that Amazon is great at it. The reason I think people tend to be surprised are like, the results didn't look super relevant the last time that I searched. It's like, Amazon doesn't care. Like, that's not what they're trying to solve for. Like, at this point, everybody that's going to use Amazon is already using Amazon. And so they're trying to optimize for different things. Like, what a lot of people don't realize is that Amazon has a very large retail media business. Retail media is in like sponsored search. They're getting paid for some of those positions that you don't find relevant. And so like, yeah, they'll probably lose some money from you maybe not finding the thing that you want, but they get the money back from the brand paying for that basically sponsored search slot. And it's much higher margin there. Like, they're not doing this stuff because they're bad at search. They've got like 1,000 people working on their search team or something like that. They're doing it because they're thinking about it very carefully as a business.
Yeah. It seems like every time I search in Amazon too, I see something different that they're doing that, oh, that's smart. I recently needed to buy an unlocked phone just for traveling. That was just like, I needed the cheapest phone possible. It didn't need to be an iPhone, or it could be a flip phone. It could be anything. I just needed an unlocked phone to put a SIM card in. And I searched unlocked phone. And as I started to search, the recommended one was unlocked phone under $50, unlocked phones sorted by price. And so it pre-built in filters that I would have normally searched an unlocked phone and then gone and then seen all different results and cases for unlocked phones, different other things, and then gone to filters and maybe tried to sort by price. But it baked in suggestions with a filter. So unlocked phones sorted by price, unlocked phones under $50. I thought that was genius. Like, that saves 2 clicks, gets it more relevant. Like, every time I search, I see something they're doing that like, oh, that like, you're right. Like, I hear a lot of people say, well, I'm searching for a phone, but I'm getting phone cases and I'm getting whatever screen protectors, but I'm looking for a phone. Like, Amazon knows what they're doing. Like, they're...
Yeah, so, they've been at this for a long time. If I remember it, they were... Don't quote me on this, please. But I think they were the ones that actually thought, like, came up with the idea of recommendations in the first place. Like, those folks have been in like product discovery and like on the forefront of it for. I mean, even right now, like if you go on to Amazon, I can't remember if this is still an A/B test or if they've launched it to everybody. But there's this new thing that within like apparel, there you'll see a button on basically every single one of the results that's like find similar to this. And basically what it does on the back end, at least as far as I can tell, is it's essentially doing like an image search to find things that look similar to it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's innovation. Like, that's really cool. That's probably something that we'll see on other places outside of Amazon. We've had customers start asking us for it now, like over the last like few months, but Amazon came up with it first.
I think you're right about the recommended products thing. I remember we had a bundling app, I don't know, launched it maybe 12 years ago. And one of the requests was they wanted it to look like people also bought or you might also like. And they wanted the widget to look exactly like Amazon's widget because Amazon, like, they had set the bar in recommended products. And I think they might have been that concept of having on every product page, people frequently bought together. That's what it was, frequently bought together. And so, yeah.
This is the thing. Like, I think that there's still a lot of room for innovation within product discovery, especially now with the advent of generative AI. Like, I definitely don't think this is a solved problem. I think there's a reason Amazon still has like 1,000 people working on it. Google has way more than that. But I also think that it's an economies of scale problem. And so, like, the way to compete against these companies that do really, really well with it, like the Amazons of the world, at least in my opinion, is you don't build it yourself. Like, you don't build it on top of a developer tool or something like that and then like try to build the AI yourself. Like, you really want somebody, and obviously I'm biased in this, but you really want somebody that's focused on your use case and that's investing like basically all of their time just in that. Because at the end of the day, the e-commerce product discovery problem, like, it's not that different across different e-commerce websites. Like, with all of these, you know, you've got a search bar, like you've got an add to cart, you've got the search engine results page, like you either abandon the cart or you actually buy what's within it. The clickstream is really, really similar across them. And so it's like, at least our philosophy on it is, if we focus on just this one thing and we do it really, really well and we do it better than everybody else and we can prove that we do it better than everybody else because we're just focusing on this one thing, like, that's the way to help every retailer, every brand, every B2B site that's not called Amazon compete with them.
Yeah.
I love this quote. Somebody was asking the founder of Shopify, do you ever want to compete with Amazon? And his response was, I don't want to compete with them. I want to arm the rebels. And I think that's exactly right. And I think that's our place in the world too. And like, what we want to do is we want to arm the rebels and make this stuff more competitive. And that same great technology or even better technology than what Amazon has and that innovation that they're putting into it. Like, we want to give that to everybody else so they have a chance to compete.
I love it. That's, I think, a great spot to end the regular segment of the podcast. I like to end, I actually only got through about half the questions of the podcast, but I like to do it you may not know this or not, but as we're recording this, you're episode 2 of season 3. And each season we do, at the end of each episode, 5 lightning round questions, which we're going to compile into a blog post at the end and share every guest from season 3, like their thoughts on these 5 questions, and then and we'll share it out. So I shared them with you earlier. I don't know if you had a chance to look at them or not, but fine. I'm going to put you on the hot spot here. So end with these 5 questions and then I'll get some details on where people can find you. But are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. So it doesn't have to be one word, but one thought.
Good.
So
it's one sentence or like one thought that you respond?
No, just one thought. Okay. Like, don't speak for 5 minutes on each question kind of thing. That's okay. All. Yeah. But yes, however you want to say it, it's fine. Okay. I just wanted to say it doesn't have to be one word kind of thing. That's the,
Cool.
Okay. First question. What is one thing you think pretty much every e-commerce brand could be doing better today?
Can I say product discovery?
100%. I actually think that's a very relevant answer, to be honest.
All right. Well, then
product discovery. Like, yeah, I actually think that that is very true. In 5 years, what do you think will be the biggest difference in e-commerce technology platforms versus today? Actually, I know you're very active in like the Mock Alliance and Composable Commerce. You probably have a lot of thoughts around this, but 5 years forward, what's the biggest difference in the technology and platforms and the way people approach e-commerce versus today?
Yeah, I think that AI shopping assistance will not be something that's like theoretical or hypothetical. I think there'll be something that's standardized. I think we're seeing the beginning of that right now with like Amazon releasing this thing called Rufus, which is their version of it, Walmart releasing a version of it. Like, you see those two companies start to go after something that's the beginning of standardization.
Yeah. I always call it the Amazon effect. When they have 2-day free shipping, everyone else expects 2-day free shipping. When they have free returns, it's the,
Exactly.
Then my next question, actually, you kind of answered it. As in 5 years, what will be the biggest difference in the way customers shop online versus how they do now? Which actually, you answered that. My last question was more around the technology and platforms people use versus how they shop. So I'm going to use that answer for that one. But now 5 years from now, what will be one of the biggest differences in platforms, technologies? Will commerce just be embedded everywhere in video and social? Or like, we've come from a world where like platforms were king and now it's become a lot more decentralized. What are your thoughts around how commerce is done from a technology standpoint?
Yeah, 2 things. One is that I think that there will be a lot more work done to create standardized ways of best in breed platforms working together. Like, I think that that's something that everybody within the Mock Alliance, we can all be doing better at. I think that it's good right now, but I think that at least with most companies, but I think in the future, we're going to create better standards for how we work together. The other thing is, I think there's going to be more consolidation. So that's the other way to make things work better together. And I think that that's probably coming too.
Yeah, I agree. Starting to already see it probably. What's your biggest pet peeve when you shop online?
Probably when the price is marked as one thing, when I'm looking at it from the search engine results page. And then as something else once I get to the PDP, or it's not available in my size once I get to the PDP, or basically something that surprises me once I get to the PDP.
Yeah. Last question. What's your favorite online store and why, if you can share any details? And if you can't think of a favorite online store, the last place you bought something online.
I like a lot of online stores.
Yeah.
That's hard. I want to choose just one favorite.
We've got some weird answers for this one, so no pressure. Nothing's off the table, Ellie.
I feel an immense amount of pressure. favorite online store. I guess lately we started working with Under Armour and I like their website quite a bit. Probably a lot of it has to do with like, I really like their product.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. I love it. I'm wearing Under Armour pants as we speak right now, actually. So there you go.
There you go. It's a great brand.
Ellie, where can people find you? What social platforms are you active on? If they want to learn more about Constructor and if it might be a search solution for them, where would you like to send people?
Yeah, I'm boring. I'm mostly just on LinkedIn.
That's fine. Nothing wrong with that.
If you look up my name on LinkedIn, I think I'm the only person with my weirdly spelled last name. So I should be pretty difficult to find.
We'll link to it as well.
I appreciate that. And the website for the company, it's, you said constructor.io. If you do constructor.com, you'll get to the same place. We bought the .com a few years ago, but.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Constructor with whatever you want after, you'll probably get to the right place.
Amazing. Ellie, thank you so much. This has been fascinating. I've learned some stuff and really appreciate you taking the time to come on our show.
Thank you so much for having me. It was good to chat with you.
Have you ever had a great shopping experience in the store, found all the products you wanted, enjoyed the whole experience, but then had a bad interaction with the cashier when you were checking out? Maybe the line took too long, maybe they were grumpy or rude. The checkout is the handshake between you and your customer. It's a sensitive part of the shopping journey, and it can build trust and strengthen relationships, or it can ruin them. If you're interested in learning how to create amazing handshakes between you and your customers when they're checking out, we'd love to talk. Visit boldcommerce.com today to learn more.